Good evening. I'm Patricia Naft, and welcome to Local Motion, where we go in-depth with local public affairs from around the KVNF listening area. Today on the show, we'll be showcasing the original feature reporting done across the region. With Election Day coming up soon, we'll be highlighting the political stories you may have heard here on KVNF and statewide stories that also have a meaningful impact here on the Western Slope. 10 months into legalization, marijuana continues to be a divisive issue at the state and local level. KVNF's Laura Pomisano has the story.
And here we have two cannabis plants that are mature and ready to be harvested. If you look at that, you can see the purple on them and you can see the medicine on them.
Scott Wilson owned the first medical marijuana store in Colorado's Delta County. Its stores opened in 2010 after a state law passed allowing for the retail sale of medical marijuana. But 6 months later, Paonia voters decided to ban medical marijuana sales in their town, and Wilson had to close his store. He says he took a financial hit, but money wasn't his main concern.
People can recover financially. But when you take their medicine away, you're talking about a whole new ball game. Now you're hurting people physically.
Wilson still grows marijuana for individuals with illnesses like cancer. He's also a war veteran who uses the plant to treat his own medical condition.
I'm a veteran of Desert Storm. I'm also a veteran of the Kosovar War and OIF, OEF, that's Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom. I served in every one of them, and as a result of lots of combat deployments, I developed PTSD. Now, remember, I never really used marijuana because I was a military veteran, and I was hesitant to try it. But it helped very, very much. In fact, it helped so good I was able to get off some of my prescription medications.
Wilson is hoping Paonia voters have changed their minds on the pot industry. The town is voting in November whether to allow retail marijuana stores, testing facilities, grow operations, and manufacturing centers. At least 20 other municipalities in Colorado will have marijuana-related questions on the ballot this November. Voters in Paonia, Palisade, Gunnison, Ouray, and Federal Heights will decide whether to allow recreational marijuana establishments and whether the town should levy additional taxes on the industry. And in Paonia, the debate has divided voters. If you drive down the town's main street, you'll see red signs with black letters that say "Vote No to Marijuana Establishments." And right next door, you'll see green signs with white letters that say "Vote Yes" on the ballot measure. Paonia resident Tennille Van Vliet is a stay-at-home mom with four kids. She has a "Vote No to Marijuana" sign in her front yard. She says her community doesn't need to legalize sales of another substance that alters perception.
As a mom to four kids, there's always that concern anytime a stimulating substance is introduced into society. It puts a little bit more, you know, risk on the highway, risk in the community. I guess the reason that we're supporting not having marijuana in Paonia for recreational use is just to eliminate some of the risk factors that would come to the well-being of our family.
Van Vliet is Mormon. Her faith discourages the use of alcohol, tobacco, and other addictive substances. She's against recreational pot, but she supports using marijuana to treat illness.
Maybe if everybody could just look at it from a real open-minded perspective, I do understand that marijuana probably does have a useful measure in society. I think maybe as a medicinal option, I think if it was regulated, it probably would have a real good benefit. I think anything used in excess, you know, whether it be marijuana, tobacco, alcohol, overeating, I think anything used in excess is not helpful to our body or our mental state.
Proponents of the ballot initiative say it could bring jobs and much-needed tax revenue to the area's struggling economy, and people have to be 21 to purchase it. Opponents argue that selling recreational marijuana is not a good influence on kids and could result in more crime. Veteran Scott Wilson won't guess how the vote will go this time around. The town turned down medical marijuana establishments by 16 votes 4 years ago. But if it does pass, Wilson says he'd consider opening a recreational marijuana store.
If presented the opportunity to do it, absolutely yes, I probably would. But again, it's a very, very risky bet.
For KVNF, I'm Laura Pomisano.
There are many issues and elections across the state that affect the Western Slope, and to bring those to you, we partner with other small community stations. The Rocky Mountain Community Radio Exchange allows us to hear stories from talented reporters that affect us all. In November, the Republican Party in Colorado is aiming for control of the state Senate, and one key race is in the 5th District. It includes Delta and Hinsdale counties. The seat is up for grabs because Senator Gail Schwartz of Snowmass Village is term limited. Three candidates, each new to state politics, are urging voters to turn out to the polls, and so-called dark money is flowing into the race. Aspen Public Radio's Marcy Krivenin reports.
Carrie Donovan is knocking on doors in Willits today, near Highway 82.
Not home. That's so funny. I mean, 80% of the homes have dogs, you know?
The Democratic candidate leaves behind a signed flyer and heads to the next house. She says she's out here trying to earn votes and preparing for the job she'd like to have.
Before doing this, I can't quite get my head around how you could do a good job representing a large geographic area if you didn't do door-to-door knocking.
And that's no easy task. Senate District 5 stretches across 7 rural Western Slope counties. Donovan is a Vail native and former city council member who's billing herself as someone who knows the value of hard work.
I was raised with a real family value of service, and also it seemed like a very unique opportunity to represent all of the 7 counties, and I didn't see another voice that was going to be able to do that.
Her issues include boosting the economy by growing small business and tourism, keeping water on the Western Slope, and improving education. The word Democrat is nowhere to be found on her campaign literature. It's by design.
It was a decision to make this race really about the issues and about policy, and in a state that's so fiercely independent and unaffiliated, to present the policy issues and then let people decide from there is a more generalized approach that people seem to appreciate.
The majority of District 5 voters are registered unaffiliated, and like Donovan, her challenger, Don Supas, left Republican off of all of his flyers.
So many of the issues we face here are rural versus urban issues. They're not Democrat versus Republican issues. When it comes to protecting our water rights, when it comes to protecting our public land.
Supas's mailers stress his family ties and show a man with deep roots in Colorado. He's the mayor of Orchard City in Delta County, and he owns a heating and cooling business. His main goal is to reduce government regulations, a frustration he feels personally.
Not only what I was seeing as far as regulations through the business, but as mayor, the unfunded mandates and the burdensome regulation, it had reached a point where I thought somebody had to do something. And if not me, then who?
Supas made headlines in September after a tweet was posted on his Twitter account about a neo-Confederate website. He told the Grand Junction Sentinel a volunteer staffer was to blame, who's since been fired. In the money race, Carrie Donovan leads Supas. As of late September, Donovan has more than $130,000 to Supas's $82,000. That doesn't tell the whole story, though. Money is flowing in from groups like Mainstream Colorado and the Conservation Colorado Expenditure Committee.
District 5, of both parties, it looks winnable, and this could be the pivotal district.
John Strayer teaches political science at Colorado State University. He says this dark money from so-called 527 groups is a clear sign of how pivotal District 5 is. The winner here could tip the balance in the Senate. It's also hard to call. Over the years, the seat has been held by both parties, and this time neither candidate is an incumbent. It's an open seat.
It's easier to jump into an open seat than it is to take on an incumbent. So open seats are inviting to the party that did not hold that seat previously.
The race is tough to predict, in part because of a wild card third party candidate. Libertarian Lee Mulcahy will be on the ballot. Strayer says typically a Libertarian candidate draws votes away from the Republican.
Well, if it's a real close race, it could make the difference in terms of who wins and who loses. Third-party candidates don't win in Colorado. They don't win, with rare exception, do they win anywhere in the country. But they can affect the outcome of close contests.
Mulcahy has raised about $2,700. He says he's loyal to neither party.
I believe that neither party represents the will of the majority of the people. Instead, only serving the interests of their largest campaign contributors, the corporations and the billionaires.
His issues include preserving the Thompson Divide, nullifying Obamacare, reducing the number of nonviolent marijuana convictions, and raising the minimum wage at large companies like Walmart.
I believe that income inequality is the greatest issue facing America today. I was one of the co-architects of Occupy Aspen here. Trickle-down economics clearly works for the 1%. As a consequence, the once growing and thriving middle class in America is rapidly disappearing.
His unconventional meet-and-greets are cannabis tastings in towns throughout the district. Mulcahy's name may be familiar. He's been banned by several institutions in Aspen, including the Aspen Skiing Company, for ruffling feathers. He says that won't get in the way of running for one of the state's most competitive Senate seats. Marcy Krivenin, Aspen Public Radio News.
Voters in Colorado and Oregon will decide this fall whether or not they want the state to require labels on food containing genetically modified ingredients. Similar measures failed recently in California and Washington State, and Vermont is currently being sued for the labeling law it enacted earlier this year. As KUNC and Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon reports, the ballot measures this fall highlight a much larger national conversation about the safety and prevalence of genetically modified foods.
Ben Hamilton walks down the salad dressing aisle at his neighborhood grocery store in West Denver.
I am a label reader.
That means seeking out organic options and scanning nutritional information. But Hamilton, a human resources consultant, says he wants more, specifically whether or not the food he's about to buy has genetically modified ingredients, or GMOs.
I think a lot of people read labels and really are curious to know what is in our food supply.
Earlier this summer, Hamilton and 19 other voters in Colorado sat on a citizen review panel tasked with hearing from both sides. At the end of 3 days of debate, the group wrote up their conclusions and took a straw vote, 11-9 in favor of labels. Hamilton's yes vote is right in line with consumer groups that say GMOs come with too many unanswered questions.
I think this boils down to a consumer's right to know. So it's not to debate whether GMOs are safe or they're good for you or bad for you, but it is about a right to know what's in our food supply.
I'm not convinced that we need it at this point, and I'm not sure that it does much for Oregonians.
That's Ernest Estes, a lawyer from Portland, Oregon, the other state with GMO labeling on the ballot this November. Estes sat on a similar citizen panel in his state with the exact opposite outcome. The vote was still 11-9, but the majority didn't see the need for labels.
If there is little or no risk to the public, I'm not sure that the government should be in the role of requiring things like this.
See, current science hasn't found adverse health effects from humans eating genetically modified foods, and that's supported by the American Association for the Advancement of Science and the World Health Organization. Many scientists say in this case, more information could actually distract the public. If enacted, the labeling rules could be confusing. The meat from a cow that's fed GMO corn and hay won't be labeled. Neither will dairy products, chewing gum, alcohol, and pet food. At an issue debate, leader of Colorado Right to Know, Larry Cooper, said the proposal had to be narrowly written.
So we had to be very careful about what subjects we put in the ballot. Yes, we've eliminated some specific areas, but certainly they can be added later.
Even with the narrower language, lawsuits are likely inevitable, especially as more states look to add to the national patchwork of GMO labeling laws.
When you're compelling a business to say something or a producer to say something, there has to be some governmental interest. There has to be a substantial government interest.
That's University of Denver law professor Justin Marceau. He says the proposals in Oregon and Colorado bring up thorny constitutional issues about free speech and commerce.
Why do we need this information? If it's idle curiosity that we're all just really curious about what's in our food, that might not be good enough. If it is GMOs are harmful, well, that's a different matter.
I left a shovel out here just for this.
Farmer Paul Schlegel says he's sympathetic to curious consumers who want to know how their food is grown, but GMO labels are too far down that rabbit hole. He grows genetically engineered, or GE, sugar beets outside Longmont, Colorado. The sweet-tasting beets are turned into granulated sugar at a nearby plant.
Once it's processed, there's no GE material in the sugar. The sugar is identical to conventionally grown sugar, sugar cane, even organic sugar.
Despite that, if the measure here, called Proposition 105, passes, the sugar that's grown on his farm will bear a label saying it was genetically modified.
It's just misinformation. It's misleading. Prop 105 is a mistake, and I think hopefully the consumers can figure that out.
Consumers will have a chance to make their voices heard at the ballot box this November in both Colorado and Oregon. And with more states taking up proposals, the national debate about GMO labeling is far from over. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media reports on farm and food issues and is a collaboration of KUNC and other public media stations in the Midwest. You can find more stories at harvestpublicmedia.org. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Local Motion. This week, we're showcasing the political coverage KVNF airs that matters to you. KVNF regularly receives reports from reporter Benta Berklin at the state capitol. With Colorado's Senate race too close to call, both parties are on an all-out blitz to attract as many voters as they can prior to the November 4th election. The youth vote has traditionally helped Democrats, but Republicans see an opening with national support for President Barack Obama falling among the millennial generation. Benta Berklin has more.
Stephen Shaw served in the Navy and now attends the University of Colorado Boulder, where he's majoring in biology. He says he voted for the president in 2008 and 2012, but says he's become a less enthusiastic supporter over the years.
He had a huge supermajority, basically, with the Senate and the House, and I feel like he wasted his first 2 years, probably killed a lot of Democratic momentum, lost the House. He could have gotten more than just the Affordable Care Act done his first 2 years. He could have made good on a lot of these other promises.
Shaw is exactly the type of young voter groups like Generation Opportunity are targeting.
You know, Obamacare puts a massive amount of burden on my generation because we're paying for older, sicker, and often richer Americans.
Jonathan Lockwood is the state director for the nonprofit pro-freedom advocacy group. Generation Opportunity has been operating an office in Colorado since July.
We're the first generation in our country to be handed a worse future than previous generations.
While the group is independent, it most frequently aligns with Republicans. So far, they've spent more than $1 million on ads against Democratic incumbent Senator Mark Udall.
Washington politicians, like Senator Mark Udall, have a spending problem. They're wasting money they don't have.
I told you we can't afford that.
And sticking our generation with the bill.
And they're not the only organization targeting the 18 to 34-year-old vote. Next Gen Climate Colorado supports Udall and is focusing its ads on environmental issues against Republican Cory Gardner.
He thinks he knows better than the scientists, NASA, and the U.S. military on climate change, and thinks government should decide who can and cannot marry. He led an 8-year crusade that had outlawed birth control.
Abby Lieber works for the group. She says they've spent $3 million in ads so far this election cycle.
Senator Udall, we've seen time and time again that he's a green energy advocate, and he's definitely the type of person we need in the Senate.
But are these messages resonating with the intended demographic? Daniel Amodovar calls himself a super senior and is majoring in operations management at CU. He says he likes the environmental message, but says he's not pleased with either political party.
Well, the largest issue is probably global warming and the fact that most politicians seem to either ignore or just don't care about it when the decisions they make affect all of us that are going to be actually in the world. And if they don't care about our future, why should I care about them?
University of Colorado junior Megan Garrison is majoring in chemical engineering and says women's issues drive her vote.
I think I hear a lot of sort of ignorance from some people, and so I'm concerned about our politicians being ignorant about what women's rights are and what they need and how they feel.
Both Generation Opportunity and Generation Climate Action say many young voters feel disenfranchised. The groups are visiting college campuses to try and reach these voters. Leeper with Climate Action says she wants millennials to realize their voices do matter.
We're getting out there and we're talking to people about how you can make a difference, especially in this election cycle.
In the end, it may be tough to mobilize this demographic. Senior Costa Raptis is the first in his family to go to college. He says he doesn't think the Senate race or midterm elections are on most students' radars.
The presidential election in Colorado is pretty heated. A lot of people pay attention to it. A lot of people watching the debates, that kind of thing. But as far as the Senate goes, I think it's hugely, like, the student body is hugely unaware.
Raptis is unaffiliated and says he didn't vote for President Obama. He says he does plan to vote this fall, but still needs to learn more about the candidates before making a decision. And it's safe to say there will be no shortage of people trying to educate voters like Raptis as groups on both sides try to court the coveted millennial vote. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
The Environmental Protection Agency and the Army Corps of Engineers released a joint proposal earlier this year that outlines changes to the Clean Water Act. Two EPA officials came to Hotchkiss last June to talk about the proposed changes. Laura Pomisano was there.
The North Fork of the Gunnison River flows through southwestern Colorado. It's a waterway that feeds into the Gunnison River, a tributary for the Colorado River, which supplies drinking water to millions of people in the West. The North Fork is protected by the Clean Water Act under the definition of waters of the U.S. The EPA and Army Corps plan to change this definition. Under the current language, navigable waters like the Gunnison River, territorial seas, interstate waters, impoundments of water like reservoirs, tributaries, and wetlands adjacent to waters of the U.S. are protected under the Clean Water Act. More than 100 organizations and the Supreme Court have asked the EPA and Army Corps to revise the definition because it's confusing. Two EPA officials from Denver recently visited the western slope of Colorado to talk about the proposed changes. Nearly 30 people attended the meeting hosted by the Western Slope Conservation Center, a water advocacy group. EPA stream biologist Julia McCarthy gave a presentation on the revisions.
So I wanted to start really broadly because I recognize that there's varying levels of understanding about what the Clean Water Act is, what's exempt from the Clean Water Act, and how the Clean Water Act is currently implemented.
McCarthy says the changes will modify three parts of the Waters of the U.S. section of the Act.
Right now, there is no definition of tributary in the existing regulation, and so the proposed rule adds a definition of tributary, which defines a tributary as a water that has a bed and bank and ordinary high water mark that contributes flow to downstream traditionally navigable waters, interstate waters, or territorial seas. But it's the first time that that will be defined explicitly in the regulations.
The revisions also say adjacent or neighboring waters would be subject to regulation, and adjacent waters would include all waters, not just wetlands. Wording about interstate waters that affect commerce will also be removed, and a new term will be added, other waters, defined as waters that are isolated from other bodies of water, like prairie potholes that occur on the Great Plains. These other waters would be regulated if they affect another protected water source.
And then also what's changing is this piece where we've added certain water features and these two types of ditches as explicitly exempt from the definition of waters of the U.S.
McCarthy says under the revisions, it's also made clear that groundwater, gullies, and artificial ponds created on dry land are not regulated by the Clean Water Act.
You mentioned an exemption is return flows from irrigated agriculture. Is that
Paul Kaymeyer farms alfalfa in the area and says he attended the meeting to learn how the changes could affect his livelihood.
I think that it was good to hear clarifications, and my impression is that the EPA is trying to help define things more clearly so that both the farmers and the Army Corps can function more efficiently in the permitting process in our various farming activities.
Ranchers, conservationists, water managers, and property owners were also at the presentation. Carrie Dennison, who works for Trout Unlimited, a conservation group, says he's for the changes.
I hope and I think that it's going to provide guidance for the regulatory bodies, including the Army Corps of Engineers, on how they handle case-by-case situations and how they designate waters of the United States so that it removes some confusion between the Army Corps and water users.
At the session, EPA officials stress that the Clean Water Act is about quality and not quantity. They say the act and the proposed changes don't affect how states allocate water. McCarthy says the agency wants to hear what people think about the proposal, and that's why they are putting on informational meetings.
A riparian area or a floodplain out here in the Grand Mesa area is going to be very different than a floodplain on the lower Mississippi River. So, you know, we want to make sure that the definitions that are being provided in this rule are applicable and make sense for the types of resources that we have here in the West.
People have until October 20th to comment on the proposal. For KVNF, I'm Laura Palmisano.
This November, Colorado voters will once again decide on an amendment that would give unborn babies the same constitutional and legal rights as a person. The measure is bringing out some familiar faces, and as Benta Berkland reports, it's also impacting one of the closest U.S. Senate races.
Attack ads are already running on both sides of the political spectrum. Here's one from incumbent Democratic Senator Mark Udall, calling his challenger's record troubling.
Because this really matters, it's important you hear this directly from me. My opponent, Congressman Gardner, led a crusade that would make birth control illegal and sponsored a bill to make abortion a felony, even in cases of rape and incest. We're talking about your rights as women, as families, as Coloradans.
Udall is referring to the so-called Personhood Amendment. Colorado voters overwhelmingly rejected it twice, in 2008 and in 2010. Republican Representative Cory Gardner was a strong supporter, but has since reversed course. His campaign says Gardner now opposes the personhood measure because it has the potential to outlaw common forms of birth control. He's running his own ad.
Barack Obama's smart guys from Washington think they can come into Colorado to play politics. They're attacking me for changing my mind about personhood after I learned more and listened to more of you. No wonder Senator Udall and President Obama can't relate to that.
This year, the language on the initiative is different. Instead of granting personhood at the moment of fertilization, the proposal would include unborn human beings in the Criminal Code and Wrongful Death Act.
This would be very sweeping.
That's Nancy Leong, a professor at the University of Denver's Sturm College of Law.
The immediate thing that a lot of people are reacting to is the reproductive arena. But if you think about how many times the word person and how many times the word child appear in the Colorado Constitution, there's hardly an area of law that wouldn't potentially be affected in some way.
She cites child abuse laws as one example.
If there were some argument that a woman placed her unborn fetus in a position that led to the miscarriage.
Leong says it will also have interesting political implications.
People who believe strongly in reproductive rights will be galvanized.
Democrats are certainly trying to use the personhood proposal to attract women and independent voters. At a recent rally to kick off the No on Amendment 67 campaign, the left-leaning group Progress Now Colorado brought a full-size cutout of Congressman Gardner to illustrate his flip-flop on the issue.
I don't know if the personhood amendment per se is the big deal. The big deal is the larger backdrop.
That's Colorado State University political science professor John Strayer. He says it benefits Democrats to focus on social issues and attempt to depict Cory Gardner's views as outside the mainstream.
I think the Udall folks, knowing that Cory has an attractive persona, he's young, he's energetic, he's smart, he would be a tough opponent. And so I think from their standpoint, the strategy had to be to define Cory for most of Colorado before Cory got a chance to define himself.
Whether that'll be successful is hard to say. Polls show the U.S. Senate race is neck and neck. Owen Loftus is a spokesman for the Colorado Republican Committee. He says abortion isn't an issue at the top of most voters' minds.
Even if you look at polling about women voters, the issues that are most important to them, it's jobs and the economy.
And Loftus says he doesn't think the personhood measure will hurt Gardner, even though Gardner still supports a similar federal proposal.
It's not personhood federally. The Democrats like to say that it is personhood, but it's not.
The federal bill is called the Life at Conception Act.
Obviously, he's a victim of some bad political advice. There's no reason for him to pull local support while he's still 100% behind the federal amendment.
Jennifer Mason is a spokeswoman for the Yes on Amendment 67 campaign. She says by changing his position at the local level, Gardner is showing it's more a political game than personal conviction.
He certainly didn't win over any Republicans. You know, our base here in Colorado is made up of conservative voters. who have been very disappointed with Cory Gardner.
Still, Mason admits that most of those conservative voters are still likely to vote for Gardner, especially when they're upset over other hot-button issues, such as Obamacare and Benghazi. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
And that concludes the Local Motion News Roundup. To hear more original regional reporting, please tune in weekdays at 8 a.m. and 5:50 p.m. You've been listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Patricia Naft. Stay tuned for As the Worm Turns, coming up next.